decision time. I went. I jumped down, with the uptown train 100 feet away. I landed two-footed between the rails and got steady and minced through the steps I had planned, like a dance diagram in a book. Right foot, left foot, high over the live rail, hands on the pillars. I paused a split second and checked right. The downtown train was very close. Behind me, the uptown train slammed past. Its brakes were shrieking and grinding. A furious wind tore at my shirt. Lighted windows strobed by in the corner of my eye. I stared right. The downtown train looked huge. Decision time. I went. Right foot high over the live rail, left foot down in the rail bed. The downtown train was almost on me, just yards away. It was rocking and jerking. Its brakes were clamping hard. I could see the driver. His mouth was wide open. I could feel the air damming ahead of his cab. I abandoned the choreography, just flung myself toward the far platform. It was less than 5 feet away, but it felt infinitely distant, like the plane's horizon. But I got there. I stared right and saw every rivet and bolt on the front of the downtown train. It was coming right at me. I got my palms flat on the platform edge and vaulted up. I thought the dense press of people was going to knock me right back down, but hands grabbed at me and pulled me up. The train slammed past my shoulder and the wash of air spun me around. Windows flashed past. Oblivious passengers read books and papers or stood and swayed. Hands hold on me and dragged me into the crowd. People all around me were screaming. I saw their mouths open in panic, but I couldn't hear them. The yelp of the train's brakes was drowning them out. I put my head down and barged on through the crowd. People stepped left and right to let me pass. Some of them slapped me on the back as I went by. A ragged cheer followed me out. Only in New York. I pushed through an exit turnstile and headed for the street. Chapter 57. Madison Square Park was 7 blocks north. I had the best part of 4 hours to kill. I spent the time shopping and eating on Park Avenue South. Not because I had things to buy, not because I was especially hungry, but because it's always best to give pursuers what they don't expect. Fugitives are supposed to run far and fast. They're not supposed to dawdle through the immediate neighborhood, in and out of stores and cafes. It was just after 6 in the morning. Delis and supermarkets and diners and coffee shops were all that was open. I started in a food emporium that had an entrance on 14th Street and an exit on 15th. I spent 45 minutes in there. I took a basket and wandered the aisles and pretended to choose stuff. Less conspicuous than just hanging out, less conspicuous than wandering the aisles without a basket. I didn't want an alert manager to call anything in. I developed a fantasy where I had an apartment nearby. I stocked its imaginary kitchen with enough stuff to last 2 whole days. Coffee, of course, plus pancake mix, eggs, bacon, a loaf of bread, butter, some jam, a pack of salami, a 1/4 pound of cheese. When I got bored, and the basket got heavy, I left it in a deserted aisle and slipped out the back of the store. Next stop was a diner, 4 blocks north. I walked on the right-hand sidewalk with my back to the traffic. In the diner, I ate pancakes and bacon that someone else had shopped for and cooked. More my style. I spent another 40 minutes in there. Then I moved on 1/2 block to a French brasserie. More coffee and a croissant. Someone had left a New York Times on the chair across from me. I read it from end to end. No mention of a manhunt in the city. No mention of Sansom's Senate race in the national section. I split the final 2 hours 4 separate ways. I moved from a supermarket on the corner of Park and 22nd to a Duane Reade drugstore opposite, and then to a CVS pharmacy on Park and 23rd. Visible evidence suggested that the nation spent more on hair care than food. Then at 9:55, I stopped shopping and stepped out to the bright new morning and looped around and took a good long, careful look at my destination from the mouth of 24th Street, which was a shadowed, anonymous canyon between two huge buildings. I saw nothing that worried me. No unexplained cars, no parked vans, no pairs or trios of dressed-down people with wires in their ears. So at 10 o'clock, exactly, I stepped into Madison Square Park. I found Theresa Lee and Jacob Mark side by side on a bench near a dog run. They looked rested, but nervous and stressed, each in their own way, each for their own reasons, presumably. They were two of maybe 100 people sitting peacefully in the sun. The park was a rectangle of trees and lawns and paths. It was a small oasis, 1 block wide and 3 tall, fenced, surrounded by 4 busy sidewalks. Parks are reasonably good places for a clandestine rendezvous. Most hunters are attracted by moving targets. Most believe that fugitives stay in motion. 3 of 100 people sitting still while the city swirls around them attract less attention than 3 of 100 hustling hard down the street. Not perfect, but an acceptable risk. I checked all around one last time and sat down next to Lee. She handed me a newspaper, one of the tabloids I had already seen, the Hunt headline. She said,
"It claims we shot 3 federal agents."
"We shot 4, I said. "Don't forget the medical guy."
"But they make it sound like we used real guns. They make it sound like the guys died."
"They want to sell papers."
"We're in trouble."
"We knew that already. We didn't need a journalist to tell us."
Doherty came through again. He was texting messages to me all night long while the phone was off.
She lifted up off the bench and took a sheaf of paper out of her back pocket. 3 sheets of yellowed hotel stationery folded 4 ways. I said, "You took notes?"
She said, "They were long messages. I didn't want to keep the phone on if there were things I needed to review."
"So what do we know?"
"The 17th Precinct checked transportation gateways. Standard procedure after a major crime. 4 men left the country 3 hours after the likely time of death, through JFK. The 17th is calling them potential suspects. It's a plausible scenario."
I nodded. "The 17th Precinct is right," I said. "Lila Hoth told me so."